Star Walker Studios presents Game Master's Journey, your multidimensional RPG podcast. John Marvin of Dread Unicorn Games joins me on the show today to discuss the art of game mastering. We discuss his recent series of blog post articles in which he unpacks the instant adventure format for designing and running adventures. We also talk about third-party publishing in RPGs and John's upcoming 13th Age supplement, Gods and Icons. So join me on the journey. Together, we can become game masters truly worthy of the title. Hello, listener. Greetings, fellow GM and or player. Welcome to episode 67 of Game Master's Journey, your multidimensional RPG podcast. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker, and I'm transmitting to you today from the Obsidian Monolith somewhere outside time and space. So today I have the second part of the interview with John Marvin of Dread Unicorn Games for you, and I'm really excited for you to hear this. We had a really great discussion about all things RPG and game mastering. So specifically today, we're going to talk quite a bit about what Monty Cook Games has coined as the instant adventure format, and this is just a way to conceptualize and organize adventures. And John does a series of articles on his blog where he kind of breaks this format down and tells you how you can design adventures for yourself in this way. The idea behind the instant adventure is to be able to run an adventure with little to no prep in very little time. They're kind of one-shot adventures mainly. So we talk about that, and we also talk about a supplement John is going to be releasing in the future for 13th Age called Gods and Icons. And finally, we just have a little general discussion about third-party publishing in RPGs. So without further ado, I'm going to warm up the communications array. I'm going to get John on the horn, and we're going to talk game mastering. So one of your, or actually I think it's a series of blog posts that you've done recently that I have read, is you've done a couple now blog posts about what Monty Cook Games calls their instant adventure format. Yes. And you're kind of breaking down kind of how that works. And then you did your own instant adventure as like an example. Do you want to talk about that?
Right. It's free. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Pick it up, folks. One thing somebody pointed out, I did not add GM intrusions for it. They go, John, you always have a lot of GM intrusions. So maybe on another post, I'll do one of the GM intrusions you can throw in there. But improv, or these instant adventures, are very improv focused. So okay. They are meant for a game master who's comfortable improvising, and things don't happen. Some of the clues and NPCs and events are not necessarily tied to one specific place. There's a number of choices where you can put them depending on where the players go. So the players will never go to a dead end because
right. They'll
always end up with something interesting happening. And they're meant as one shots. You play them in one session. They're not very large. And they're also come with, well, the Monty Cook one, they have 10 adventures and they're with a number of pre-generated characters. Are all first tier. And so the idea is people come over to your house and instead of baking out a board game, because you don't want to get a whole campaign going just for this one time,
right. You
can actually pass here, choose those characters. And in the time it takes them to choose the character, the game master can read it up and be ready to ref it.
Nice.
That's why they're called instant adventures. So
I
have run a bunch of them at cons and as demos in game stores. And they're certainly a lot of fun because I love improv. I put in a lot of improv into my games. This is another kind of improv. the whole idea of helping the game master who wants to improv is a different problem, right? Than the old, here's a dungeon crawl.
Right.
Every room, you got everything in it. The players walk down, they listen to every door. They don't care if they hear anything or not because they always open every door. They always kill anything on the other side of the door. They take all the treasure. They put it in their 27 portable holds and bags of holding. And they move on. And so everything's all written down. And with the instant adventure, it's kind of a menu of allowing. So you could just improv, like, okay, I'm just going to think of it at the spot. But if you're like me, sometimes your spur of the moment thoughts are not as cool as ones right. that you've actually planned on ahead of time.
Sure.
This is kind of the best of both worlds. It gives you a framework to improv in. I've seen other ways to do improv. Like, I kickstarted the Dracula dossier.
Oh, yeah.
The director's handbook is in my hands right now for those at home. And this is an improv. It's not an improv one shot. It's the opposite. It's the total opposite. This is an improv campaign. You could play this for a year.
Nice.
And nothing is written in stone. You don't even what the vampires actually are is not written in stone. Every NPC has usually at least three write-ups. Is this NPC just an innocent, perhaps a victim? Or is it really a spy trying to control Dracula? Or is it controlled by Dracula?
Ooh.
And you have like over 100 of these NPCs. And for every place, you have all these locations. Same kind of thing. Is this an innocent location? Is it run by British intelligence? Or is it run by Dracula? And you choose. And you've got this menu of all these things. And so if the game is going slow, obviously the next thing that happens is run by Dracula. You know? Or if the players need a breather, then they get a breather. So it's totally improv. And it's making me really think, you know, how I can work that into my own games.
Yeah.
Both the instant adventure and what... Pelgrane Press, Ken Height, and Garth Ryder Hanrahan did with the Dracula dossier. And I love how when they advertise it, it advertises the gaming's most insane supplement. So there you go. For my future games, I want to encourage people that want to do a lot of improv, but at the same time, I don't want to drop you in the deep end.
Right.
If you're new to improvising, I want you to be able to pick up my adventure and still run it. So that's a challenge.
Yeah.
You can tell me how good I did or how bad I failed.
I think you did well. I'm working on, you know, my improv skills as a GM as well. I've had a few people on the show now talking about improv.
Yeah, I've listened to those.
Yeah, it seems like the new wave, you know? Like, you know, we talk about old school all the time. Well, this is new school GMing, right? the whole improv thing. And I think it's kind of where it's at. You know, if you can use your prep time to kind of shore up your weaknesses and be prepared, but be prepared to improv, like, that's pretty sweet.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So that's what these things are. I mean, you could, when I heard of improv gaming, I thought this was gaming with nothing.
Right, you know, right.
I would just sit there and improv everything.
There are no rules. I'm making them up.
Exactly. And I forgot what I just made up 2 minutes ago. I didn't see how that would work or wouldn't work for long. Maybe as a one-shot, you could pull it off.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I have the scene where the players are lost, and it could happen anywhere. Right, they forgot what the adventure is about. You know, you've had to take a break. It's been Thanksgiving. You know, and you know, everybody has that, right?
Sure.
They get at the table. Your players sit down. They look at their character sheets, and they look at each other, and they're, "What the heck were we doing?" So I have this. I call it a recombobulation scene.
Nice.
As opposed to discombobulation,
right?
And so wherever the players are, the floor collapses under their feet, and they get thrown into like a middle of this giant conflict, and whatever they don't know is at the bottom. That's what they fall into. So basically they fall into the clue that they forgot they probably already had.
So, yeah, that thing you were looking for, you just stepped in it.
Exactly. That you forgot you were looking for.
That's awesome. I love it.
And I don't have a giant map because it's huge. It's the size of a Death Star.
Nice.
What's going on inside the Sun Below Sleeping Lady. So I didn't map out every room. So there's plenty of room. I have plenty of advice on what to do for making your own stuff.
Awesome. That takes a lot of time mapping stuff out too. So if you can avoid that.
I totally suck at mapping. I give myself a C-. for Sleeping Lady, I didn't do the maps myself. I hired a cartographer, and she did such a wonderful job. Sparrow Buehrer and all my artists. I am really lucky that I found some really great artists. And I don't know if you noticed, I have pictures of food twice in this adventure, which is odd. You usually don't put food in an adventure, but I have this artist who loves doing food, and she's really good at it. And I thought, all right, do me that, and then I'll figure out a cool scene to put it in. So she has like levitating plates, and it's obviously a Numenera picture of food, but
that's awesome.
Then I had to build something off of that. It was fun. I have a whole section of optional scenes in Sleeping Lady to let you improv and let you bring on story elements when you want, not particularly because the player's made a left turn. When it makes sense for your story.
Sure. You run a lot of 13th Age, right?
Yeah, I've got two 13th Age campaigns going. One's Organized Play, which is their Adventurers League equivalent. Right? And then I'm doing a very intrigue-heavy version at home. I'm working on a 13th Age product right now, Gods and Icons.
Very cool. Awesome.
One of the things I see on boards, people playing 13th Age for the first time, they often have problems with how do they come up on the fly with improv with all the boons and all the extra quests you can get from your relationship to your icon.
Yeah.
So I have a whole thing that tells you how to choose, or if you don't want to choose, just roll a bunch of dice, old school style, and look at 50 tables, and boom, you've got it.
Awesome. I have a player, Dwayne, that would love that. He loves rolling on tables. I think you've met Dwayne before.
Yes, I have. Before. He's a big, he looks like a table roller.
Yeah, he loves it.
13th Age, each character has a relationship with multiple icons. And they are your big movers and shakers in the world. They're not gods, but they're almost. They're the big emperors or the elf queen and people like that, or the lich king.
Sure.
And every session, players roll six-sided dice, one for each relationship. And the first level character starts with three of those. So they roll three six-siders. And all they need to do is get a five or a six, and something happens. And if they get a six, they get a boon, they get a present, they get a little help from one of the icons that is associated with. And if they roll five, they get a little present, but they get a little job to do, or there's a cost, there's strings attached.
Right, sure.
And the present could just be information, important information. Oh, you know that guard post? You could like actually sneak around it if you knew where that secret door was.
Okay.
That would be one of the presents. Or it could be a magical item, which could be a one-shot, like a potion, or actually a magic sword, an actual real magic item. But you might not just give it to them. You might just tell them where they can find it, and where they might find it might be in the fist of the guy who wants to kill them. But at least they know it's a damn magical sword. Or it could be they've always had this magic sword, but they've just been given the information that if they add a magic gem to it, the sword will go up in level, basically.
Nice.
It'll become more powerful. 13th Age has a tier system, an adventurer tier, 1 to 4, champion tier, 5 to 8, and an epic tier, 9 and 10. So you can always upgrade lower magic items. So these things are great when a player or two rolls one, but sometimes everybody rolls like three of them, and you're sitting there going, how the heck am I going to get the secret information, the potions? Where are they going to come from? Who's going to deliver them? We're in the middle of a dungeon. What am I going to do? So this book will have answers to all those questions, and it'll have suggestions on how to pick. For table rollers, you will grab 6 dice and you will roll them and you will have an answer.
Nice. And, you hear that, Dwayne? That's for you.
This is the Dwayne option. I should call that right there in the rules. For Dwayne, roll these dice. So the idea is to make that run a little smoother. I'm also including icon options, which is something that I've another thing I've stolen from the organized play, where these are kind of benefits. Benefits or detriments, if this icon is powerful in your campaign because your players have chosen relationships with it, they don't have to roll dice, they just chose those relationships. Mm-hmm. Then, if they're big with the Elf Queen, we're going to see a lot of Elf Queen stuff. And yeah. The elves are going to be everywhere. And the elves aren't all nice because the Elf Queen has the drow working for her. Ah. And the spiders and the red caps. My gosh. Best monster ever in any role-playing game.
Yeah, right.
They all work for the Elf Queen, so you're going to see them a lot. And you're going to see elf magic and elf ruins. But if the players don't choose that, no. Your campaign is more about fighting demons. Well, you're going to fight a lot of demons. You know, basically, when you choose an enemy icon, you're telling the game master what you want to fight.
Awesome.
And when your enemy is in charge of the demons, well, then you're saying, I want to be a demon stomper, or maybe get stomped by the demons once in a while. But you want to see them. You want to mess it up with demons. That will be included. And 13th Age does not come with the core book or any of the books, actually, don't come with any gods. And they say, you already have gods. You've got all those other games. Use those gods. Stop bugging us. And which totally works for the way 13th Age was designed. 13th Age was designed for any player, whether a total newbie, never played a role-playing game, or an old player like me. But for GMing, they expect you are very experienced.
Okay.
This is not, you do not give 13th Age and say, go run this to like a 10-year-old who's never played a role-playing game before. So that kind of works. They assume that you already have pantheons just lying around from 7 different games on your shelves. But I'm going to actually give you a pantheon that actually works with the icons and the 13th Age, and I'll have magical items for your clerics and your paladins and your druids and your rangers that reflect those gods, and you don't have to use them. These are the entire supplement is full of, is a collection of optional rules. You can use one, you can use them all.
Awesome.
But that's the gods of gods and icons, and I actually have a partner who is busy working on the gods as we speak.
Awesome.
And I'm working on the what happens when you roll 5s and 6s. And we're going to put it all together, do some play testing, and we're discussing on whether or not to kickstart it or not.
Cool. Well, I'm glad you're doing the gods, because I that sounds like a cop-out to me. I'm sorry, but the whole, we're not going to do gods because those are in other games. Well, what if I don't want to buy other games? What if I just want to buy 13th Age?
Well, have I got a product for you?
That's right. Here comes John Marvin. He's got you covered.
Exactly. So, that's yeah. Awesome. So I mean, I'm seriously trying to plug a hole.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you are.
And I'm not picking on them. I like it because they give me an opportunity to do that.
Right, yeah. Now, I'm curious, would the gods be yet more icons, or are they something different?
They're something different.
Okay.
Yeah, they'll be a little, they're not going to be gods that are you run into all the time, but
right.
The icons might actually be mouthpieces of the gods in certain circumstances.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, especially if you're playing a paladin, what kind of sword do you want? You want a holy sword.
Right.
You want a holy sword about your god. You want, you want like stuff that's really tied in. Whereas if you're a rogue, you probably don't care.
Right. Sure.
Some rogues do. So that'll be a way to bring that in. In 13th Age, unlike other D20 games, if you're a cleric, your spells are not predicated on your gods at all.
Okay.
So if you want a talent to be really good at healing, you get it. You just choose. You know, so you don't have to say, oh, I took the purple goddess and therefore I can't heal well. You can be a good healer and worship the purple goddess. So I'm not going to change any of the 13th rule age rules, but I'm going to give some options to like basically bring them more in as background and role playing. And sometimes the icons will be doing their bidding.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that's a good way to do it, because I mean, from what I understand from what you've said, basically you have a 2 in 6 chance of your icon like helping you out in some way,
and you get to roll 3 times.
Oh, okay, so pretty good odds.
Those are good odds.
So it wouldn't make sense for a deity to like, oh hey, no, I'm gonna come do this thing for you because you're awesome.
No and even with the icons, you know, you're first level, the icon doesn't show up. You
know, one of his minions.
Exactly. So, and so part of what will be in this supplement is a collection of minions.
Oh,
you know, the
great
minion that helps you when you're in town will be the different than the minion that helps you when you're in the dungeon. You know, a spirit might show up in the dungeon, but you might, a knight could show up in town. You know, it wouldn't make sense for, you know, all of a sudden some knight to jump 5 levels down the dungeon to hand you a secret, whisper in your ear, and then disappear.
Yeah.
But a magical spirit, that's perfect. But as long as you're in town, how about some cool NPCs you can interact with?
Yeah.
So that'll be included too. And then once I finish that, then we go back to Numenera to do how, that's how the light gets in.
Awesome.
And then after that, I don't know.
Well, and a nice thing about your 13th age supplement is, I mean, obviously anybody who runs or plays 13th age is going to be excited about that. But that's also can be a great resource for anyone running D&D, Pathfinder,
yeah,
you know, any fantasy RPG, probably Dungeon World, you know.
Right. Yeah, and 13th age is a D20 game.
It's, right,
you know,
right.
It exists under the D20 SRD and all that whole open gaming license.
Yeah.
It is a child of that ilk. So, yeah, and what's interesting for me is that a lot of the great stuff that has been published but 13th Age is open gaming content.
Okay.
13th Age is under the open gaming license like Pathfinder is.
Okay.
So what's nice about that is I can use things from the 13th Age books that are open game material. So I don't have to buy a license to do that. I mean, they
awesome
do have IP that I can't use.
Sure, sure.
But also, I could Kickstart if I want. Which
nice.
Some licenses don't allow you to do that.
Right,
so,
sure.
I'm really interested in learning how to run good Kickstarters. I'm a fool for Kickstarter backing. I've backed so many Kickstarters.
Do you have the book by Monty Cook about kickstarting?
I do.
Okay,
yes.
Good. Because if you didn't, I was going to recommend it because
yes,
I learned a lot. I've never done a Kickstarter, but I read that book. And if I ever did one, I'd probably read the book like 3 more times before I did.
I know. I haven't read it in a while. Before, if I do a Kickstarter right before that, I will reread it. It's not that long.
No. It's good stuff, though. And if anybody knows Kickstarter, it's Monty Cook.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. I'm really enjoying the latest Numenera Kickstarter. I've, you know, just gotten our first one with Numenera in outer space.
Yeah.
And there's going to be new. And I was so happy he did not do Numenera under the ground, right?
Yeah, you're right. They didn't do that.
I was going, oh, well, that's why when I first made The Sun Below, I was going to do a shell world where the world's hollow and then there's another shell and that was going to be my world.
Okay.
But then I thought, God, what if Monty like digs a hole? If Monty ever gets a shovel, I'll be doomed. So that's why I made it a tube. So Monty can do whatever he wants. And I go, my tube gets missed by whatever Monty does. As long as he doesn't do a shell, then I'm big trouble.
I don't know. They're pretty cool. I don't think they would do that. They're pretty cool about stuff like that. Seems
and
like
they do know about my games because they often will retweet my my stuff when I announce a new product and whatnot. They don't just like go, here's your little license, and they ignore me. They actually support me. When I do when I announce a new game, I get retweets. I get stuff on Facebook from them. Sometimes when they once a week they send a newsletter out, I get mentioned in that. So they're very supportive. I have nothing but good feelings for working with them. And same with the people at Pelgrane Press have been very supportive of me. I don't even have a product out, but they've asked some questions and been very nice. And I went to WorldCon, the World Science Fiction Convention, and I demoed both Numenera and 13th Age, and both companies like sent me stuff. I will say Pelgrane Press sent me a t-shirt.
Oh.
But anyway, there's so many cool people in the gaming industry.
Yeah,
I'm sure there's jerks, but besides me, I don't know any.
Yeah, I really like how they've handled the third-party products for Cypher System. Because I know a lot of people, myself included, are very gun-shy about third-party products because of what happened with the OGL with third edition D&D, and how there was really no quality control at all. And it kind of, I think, diminished the brand. And, you know, it would have been very easy for Monte Cook Games to be like, you know what, we're not doing any licensing because we don't want that to happen. But instead, I think they found a good middle road where people like you are able to put out quality products, but we don't have like this just saturation of not so great stuff.
Not so great. It's overstating some of the quality of I was so excited when the 3.0 came out. You know, I bought the first Freeport Adventure you know, oh, Green Ronin is doing all this great stuff. Everything else must be as good as Green Ronin stuff.
Yeah, not so much.
No, actually it wasn't. So yeah, it's interesting what's going on with the lack of a license in 5th edition.
Well, speaking of Green Ronin, did you know that they did the book that just came out for D&D? It's
the pretty demons. Cool. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They do good work. Yeah. I have a lot of respect for them. And Chris and Nicole, I met them ages ago, like at game cons and whatnot. We're still keep in touch via the interwebs.
Yeah, we still don't have an OGL for 5th edition, but people seem to be doing just fine with the 3rd edition one.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, you can't like re-explain advantage, right?
Right.
But you can just say, you know, this is advantageous.
Right, exactly.
All right, and some people don't even bother with that little, you know. So, yeah. And I'm interested in doing some 5e stuff soon. But I've just got so much on my plate right now, I haven't even decided what to do.
Yeah.
5e is definitely my favorite official D&D.
Oh, I agree. I just made this kind of silly post on the Game Master's Journey group about how, you know, I was immersed in Cypher System, especially Numenera, for a couple years. And, like, that's all I did. Yeah. And then I did D&D, and then I did Star Wars, and it's like now I'm kind of back to D&D, and it's like Star Wars, I like it, but it's a little, I would rather play it. It's the first game I found that I would rather play than GM, just because it's a little too crunchy for me. It makes me very tired to run it. After about 3 hours, I'm just drained.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The dice, I don't know. They're cool looking.
Yeah,
and they're fun.
Yeah,
for a while. But yeah, I'm not. I had their predecessor game when they did the third version of Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, and they used the same mechanics that they have in Star Wars. They had the same dice, and apparently, you can copyright dice.
Really, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I don't know if that's why they did it, but yeah, those are they own those kind of dice with those icons on it, I guess. But anyway, yeah, the Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, I play tested it version 3, and it was even more complicated.
Oh, wow.
So they actually streamlined it.
It's hard to imagine.
Yeah. Oh, God. But yeah. Yeah, I actually prefer the second edition of Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, but you could tell good stories, and it's true. You can. Everybody says, well, you could tell good stories in any game, and that's very true, but it makes it easier to tell stories in some games than others.
Yes, yes. I've decided that the Star Wars system is my hard limit of crunch. I do not want to run a game that's any more crunchy.
Don't go to Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay version 3. Because it's the same system with more crunch.
Yeah, I think Numenera spoils you. You don't have to roll dice as a GM. It's so easy to improv. It's so easy to come up with adventures and creatures and everything else. That it's really hard after that to go to something like Star Wars where you have to put all of this, like, it's like doing homework.
I know, stat blocks. Yeah. But one time I looked at stat blocks of the same creature from multiple versions of D&D, and that was very instructive.
I'll bet.
And some people, you know, they're really smart, and their brains can handle all that, and they enjoy it.
Sure.
And it makes them kind of like it's an achievement, right? They can keep all that crunch in their heads, and I'm not one of them, but there's nothing wrong with that. You know, I never want to tell people they're having fun wrong.
Sure.
But for me, I want things to be lighter. And it's one of the advantages to me, 13th Age, is like monster special abilities. I don't have to remember them. They just show up on a table. When I roll an even hit, the dragon breath comes out. I don't have to remember, does it three times a day or whatever. And player abilities are the same way. So they have all these bonus abilities, but it's not so complicated for them, depending on their class. They're simpler, but like the fighter class, if you roll an even hit, it's different special ability than if you roll an odd hit. And that's cool because it gives you the ability to have like these awesome powers. But do you have to remember bazillions of them? No. And if you're a spellcaster, you never end up with 120 spells at the top level.
Yeah.
It self prunes as you go up. You only have a manageable number of them. They just get more awesome. So it's a cool thing. The different versions, you know, you could just look at the goblin.
Yeah.
But then Numenera, like the I always tell people, well, here's a Numenera stat block, 5. I'm done. That was it. Stat block. I mean, most monsters, you complicate it up a little bit, but that, in a nutshell, is a Numenera stat block. And if you're writing adventures or games, supplements, doing a really complicated stat block, that becomes your job.
Yeah.
All day long, over and over again. I want to do that.
Yeah. I'm curious what someone who's brand new to RPGs, like how they would rate 5th edition as far as like complexity and how hard is it to learn? Because for me, I mean, I've been running some form of D&D for over 20 years. So learning 5th edition for me was basically a thing of remembering which things from 3rd edition no longer apply, which things from 2nd edition are back. And that, I mean, it was so easy, but I'm curious for someone new. I mean, obviously it's a little bit more than like Numenera. There's a little bit more crunch or more to learn or keep track of.
Oh yeah, a lot compared to Numenera, but I would think that it would be a lot easier to pick up than 3.5.
Oh, definitely.
By a long shot. You know? But, yeah. And when I looked at the same monsters, you know, the 5th edition D&D stat blocks were way shorter than 3.5 stat blocks.
Oh, yeah. Do you know off the top of your head what goblins do in 13th Age? What, like, their special thing is or whatever?
No, there are a couple versions of goblins.
Okay.
The cool ones ride on fire breathing bats.
Nice. I like that.
I know. So I don't off the top of my head haven't been using goblins a lot because of which icons my players chose.
Ah, of course.
And if they chose differently, I'd be using lots of goblins. Nope, my players demons. Straight up.
Nice. Nice.
and devils. I actually did an instant adventure for 13th Age.
Okay.
Based on devils.
Nice.
And one demon. But that demon was quasi-friendly. He just wants the players to sign in blood on this contract.
That's all.
But, you know.
Do you watch Supernatural at all?
Sometimes, yeah.
So is he like the Crowley kind of demon? Mark Shepard? love him. He's a businessman.
Exactly. And see, one of my players does not have a antagonistic or a negative relationship with the head of the demons.
Okay.
Has a complicated relationship. A little bit yes, a little bit no. Nice. And so yeah, that's where my Crowley type character comes in.
That's awesome.
Because she started rolling on her icon relationships, and guess who walks in the door, you know? And I'm doing a more of a urban intrigue campaign.
Oh, cool.
And I'm thinking of productizing some of this later. A lot of the there's some really cool dungeon crawls out there for 13th Age, but there's not a lot of an intrigue yet. So that might be another hole I could fill.
Yeah. I know there are people that love their intrigue.
Yeah.
I'm sure there'd be people interested in that.
Well, and you can just, you know, this icon's my friend and this is icon's my enemy. I just roll right off of that. I let the icon relationships drive the intrigue.
Awesome.
And in the official book, most of the icons that people have relationship with are good and heroic.
Mm-hmm.
For an intrigue game, I make them much more shady.
Yeah.
No, whereas you don't, there's a little bit good, a little bit bad. There's a few that I let remain heroic. And my Lord of the Undead, I totally changed because instead of being like a Sauron type, I make him a vampire lord who's part of the Empire. He's got a whole duchy and he runs it, and the humans under him think, well, yeah, he's a murderous monster that eats blood, but you know what? The other medieval lords, they're horrible too. And this guy, if any undead threatens me, he knocks him down. You know, as long as I'm not his lunch, I'm being treated at least as good and often better than the humans over there.
Awesome.
Human lords are treating their people. So I put that in there. But the players don't know, is he really bad and just trying to pretend to be good sometimes or what? There's always, dwarves and elves are getting together again. It's a lot of fun. But when you don't have both in the party, I think it's fun to like ramp up that old tension.
Yeah, totally.
Dwarves, that's what you hunt, says the elf queen.
Nice.
Or elves, that's what you hit with an axe.
Awesome. Well, John, I really appreciate you coming on here. And
oh, I love this show.
You are welcome back anytime. I would love to talk about your 13th Age campaign or really anything you want to talk about. Be great.
Well, yeah, like I said, it's always glad to not only hear your voice, but actually be able to talk back.
Yeah,
right? Because I listen to you all the time.
Yeah, and just by necessity, the show is kind of very focused on whatever I'm into at the moment. Mm-hmm. So, like, it was Star Wars for a while, and now it's back to D&D. So it's really great to get someone like you on that plays some different games, you know, so we can talk about other things. All right, well, it's about time to wrap up the 67th episode of Game Master's Journey. I'm sorry that the interview kind of cut off a little bit abruptly there. I've got this bad habit of cruising the Obsidian Monolith way too close to black holes, and I got too close to a black hole again, and it just sucked up John's signal, and I lost him. But luckily, we were able to get through our conversation before that happened, so you didn't really miss any real content. You just kind of miss the signing off at the end. So I apologize about that. But again, all the good stuff is there. So no worries. If you'd like to reach me, you can email me at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. You can follow me on Google Plus, just search for Lex Starwalker, and you can follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker. Please visit the website starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney, and there you can find the show notes for episode 67, and I'll have lots of helpful links in there for you if you'd like to learn more about John Marvin, Dread Unicorn Games, The Sun Below, Gods and Icons, or anything else that we talked about today. Also in the show notes, you can find our Patreon button if you'd like to learn more about becoming a patron and supporting the show. You can also find the donate button if you'd like to make a one-time donation. I really appreciate all the patrons and all the people that donate. And you can also find buttons for iTunes and Stitcher if you want to subscribe or leave a review there. Really appreciate reviews. And finally, at the bottom of the show notes, you can find a sign up for our monthly newsletter. You'll get at most one email a month just telling you about Starwalker Studios and what's going on with the various shows. You can also find various other ways of supporting the studio and supporting this podcast in your ear holes right now at the bottom of the show notes, including getting a free 30-day trial of Audible Books, Amazon referral link, all kinds of good stuff in the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com. And finally, you can find my other podcast that I produce. Currently, I'm producing another weekly show called Expanse, the unofficial podcast, in which we discuss, you guessed it, the new hit TV show from sci-fi, The Expanse. Probably, definitely the best sci-fi I've seen on TV ever. Awesome stuff. And I just watched the first episode the other night and was blown away. I just have a few words for you. Canterbury, flip and burn, baby. Whew, that was awesome. In fact, I think I'm going to go watch it again. But anyway, in addition to checking out my Expanse podcast, I hope that you have a chance to play your favorite RPG this week. I'll be back soon with another episode of Game Master's Journey. Until then, game on and watch The Expanse.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music provided by Cloudwalker, Renfield, Tranceboy, and Ish. Please see the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney.